Now, the new word to get used to is endemic. It's a great word when it comes to COVID-19. That's according to my next guest, Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College Dublin. And Luke is here. Good morning to
Hi,
you,
Claire.
Luke. So it's a really different feeling this morning compared to all of the other times we've spoken over
it
the
is,
last
yeah.
2 years. And the two words I want to ask you about first, endemic, as I mentioned there, and endgame. Are we in both of those places now?
There's a huge consensus that we're now entering the endgame. Let's put it that way. I mean, the WHO Europe Director, Hans Kluge, yesterday said we're now entering this endgame phase. Even Tedros said the world will enter the endgame in a way. You know, so all the evidence looks great that this is now somewhat under control.
And endemic?
That's a tricky word. That means it's predictable. You know, now the trouble is endemic disease can get severe. Malaria is an endemic disease and you get these big outbreaks, you know. But of course, with COVID, we've got vaccines. So that will control any endemic disease. Mm. An endemic is better than an epidemic when it surges, you know.
But haven't we been told to be wary of being too comfortable with the word endemic?
There's always a fear if you say it's all over, you know, because people start relaxing too much in a way, you know. But the really good news is we know what to do. And the WHO European director said, let's prepare for next winter. I know it seems like a long way off, but we've got to get ready now. There will be a surge next winter. So it's a respiratory disease like the flu. It will come back, you know. Let's get ready for that. And we've got the vaccines, we've antivirals, you know. Very excitingly, there's a pan-coronavirus vaccine, which is about to be developed further, which will work against any variant, you see. Mm-hmm. So in other words, there's huge optimism now because of all this discovery in science.
How can they predict what's needed to work against any variant?
Well, this is the trick. It'll be a single vaccine that should work against any type of COVID-19 SARS-CoV-2 virus, you know, which is marvellous. They've tried to have one for flu for a long time, you see. Didn't quite get there. But all these great advances in vaccine technology means there's a really good chance we'd have what's called a pan-coronavirus vaccine.
Have you had a chance to look at this variant that they're examining in Denmark, this sub-Omicron variant, and what do you think about that one?
That's nothing to worry about, actually. Actually, it's even more transmissible, which is good. But yet again, it's not causing like severe disease. So it's a sibling of Omicron, if you like. And again, that's a really good one in a way. That could spread throughout the world, give us even more protection. Again, the data grows, Claire, by the way. If you've been vaccinated and you get infected, that gives massive protection. It's like having a double booster in a way, you see. Mm-hmm. So now, we wouldn't encourage people to get infected, by the way, because there can be negative consequences.
And some people were talking about that. You know, I'd rather get it over with now, get it over and done with. That's not advisable.
No. Because some people will get very sick still with this virus anyway, you know, that wouldn't be advised. But if you do get infected post-vaccination, you shouldn't worry too much about it because the vaccine will protect you and it'll give you even stronger protection down the line.
Is this, I mean, I'm inviting you to say I told you so, but is this the way you would have expected it to go, that we would have Delta very serious, then Omicron, which would take over from Delta and be less serious and move towards this immunity that we have through infection and vaccination?
Not really, no. We were lucky with Omicron. A more malignant one could have cropped up, you see. But Omicron turned out to be less disease-causing, and that was a bit of luck in a way. There's no guarantee a virus gets weaker over time, by the way. That's people misunderstand that in a way. You can get a vicious one cropping up, you know. And of course, that's our other concern, is will new variants come along, you see, that will be more malign. And we keep a very close eye on that. There's optimism there as well, by the way, because we know the vaccines work against Omicron. And remember, the vaccines were to a previous variant. So therefore, if a new variant crops up, there's a good chance the immunity we've built up will work against any variant anyway. Mm-hmm. And again, there's,
because there was that theory that people will have been reading about, that it's in the virus's interest for the host to survive. So it's not in the virus's interest to kill the host.
That's true, but it still doesn't mean a really nasty one mightn't crop up anyway. You know, a brand new one might come along that could be vicious, you know. So it's a strange idea.
That possibility still exists.
That still exists, yeah. There's still a risk of a variant that could be more dangerous, you know. Now, again, we can spot that. And the really good weapon, by the way, is the antivirals. They will work against any variant. We know that now. And in fact, this week, the EMA have said they're about to approve, it looks like, Paxlovid, which is a really important one. So by Friday, I predict that'll be approved in Europe. And again, if a new variant cropped up, you can take a tablet, you see, to deal with that one.
But so who takes the tablet and when?
Just at-risk people, of course. And the thing we worry about now are the immunocompromised people, the really vulnerable people. We keep an eye on them, remember. They'll be given this antiviral first because they're at the most risk of severe disease. So it could go more widespread, of course, ultimately.
So once they test positive, you have to catch it at the right moment and administer the antiviral then?
Exactly. You have a 5-day window, actually, post-symptoms. You can give the antiviral. The trials have shown this. And it kills the virus, you see. Mm-hmm. And again, it's a new drug, so the first people you give it to are the ones who really need it most. And that's the most vulnerable.
So, I mean, as people process what happened on Friday and the announcement that came here and the unwinding of virtually all of the restrictions, I think people's heads are spinning a little bit. I mean, can you understand that? And do you think it was the right thing to do?
My head is spinning as well, to be honest. I couldn't believe it happened so quickly, in a way. You know, now, it made sense because it won't get much better better in the next few months, let's put it that way. We have massive vaccination now, which is tremendous, you know, and the Omicron wave is now passing. So now is the time to reopen, you see. And people will be anxious. I would encourage people to get out, though, because now is the time to reclaim our lives in a way. And people have been stuck at home and there's anxieties. Go out, you know, start enjoying yourself again, because your mental health is extremely important mm-hmm. in this period. And a big message, Claire, though, is get ready for next winter. Let's face it, because there will be a spike in the next few weeks, by the way, because of all the mixing we're doing. But we know it's mild as a disease, so we don't worry too much about that. But next winter, it's bound to go up again. And let's make sure we're prepared for next winter.
I think people will have seen the pictures over the weekend of, you know, young people crowding into bars and cheering when the announcement happened. And part of your brain is going, that just feels wrong. It looks wrong. Because now we're just in that zone where we think standing beside somebody with no mask on is a dangerous thing to do. So clearly there will be more infections in the coming weeks.
But remember, Omicron doesn't infect your lungs as much as the upper airways. That's for definite now, by the way. So it's like having a cold or quite a bad flu, you know. So again, if we do see an increase in cases, it shouldn't increase pressure on the hospitals, which again is why NPHET acted, I guess. They could predict this in a way, and it won't put pressure on our health services.
And we shouldn't forget, of course, the people who have been impacted by long COVID. They may have had COVID a year ago and still be feeling the impacts of it. What work is being done for those people?
Yeah, that's a huge area. I was last week in Canada at a meeting on long COVID. It's the big topic now. The vaccines have been discovered, basically, and there's new vaccines coming. Now the science moves on to what is long COVID? Can we diagnose it? Can we treat it? You know, and advances are happening there as well. They're discovering all kinds of markers in the immune system are changing in long COVID people, and that means you can diagnose it and then possibly treat it, which would be tremendous, because some people get very severe long COVID.
And what were they telling you? What were they saying at that meeting about what long COVID is, how it presents?
It's still a mystery, of course. There's probably two or three reasons. One is the virus might be still in your body and burning away and giving you symptoms. That's one possibility. The second is your immune system is off kilter. In other words, you fought the war, but the troops are still there and they're causing these symptoms. You know, it's kind of an autoimmune type thing. They're the two main ideas that we have. And we see very clear markers of the immune system up in people with long COVID. So we know the immune system is misbehaving, if you will. And of course, you could ramp that down now. You could target that piece of the immune system and get rid of those symptoms, and that will treat long COVID. Mm-hmm. The idea. But it's a huge amount of research. The US is putting billions of dollars into this, by the way, as an area.
So we need a strategy to deal with long COVID. I know there are some long COVID clinics in this country, but are you saying now that there needs to be, we need to build up a system around dealing with this for these people?
Definitely, yeah. And help to diagnose it, because people worry and they say, is it something else, you know? So diagnosis is very important in your disease, and then ultimately treatments for long COVID, which could have use in many post-viral syndromes as well. And the other thing I'd say there is, we're learning a lot from COVID that would be useful in other diseases. New vaccines for other things, for instance, endless lateral flow tests for many things. There's all these discussions now what the spin-outs are going to be, and post-viral syndrome will be one that hopefully will benefit from this.
What are things like in Canada where you were?
Well, the pubs are still closed. So I watched on Thursday night, I went for a drink to celebrate myself outdoors in a pub because the pub was closed. It was minus 10.
Right.
But I sat there and had a drink.
Pleasant.
At minus 10.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah, but you see, there's a lot more hospitalisation in Canada, and their vaccination rates overall lower. So they're slightly more cautious. They're going to reopen the pubs on January 31st. That's their key day that's coming up, you know, but
and
they're slightly behind us.
The cases that are happening at the moment, are they Omicron cases or Delta?
Mix. Delta's still there, remember, and they're still infecting people, you know. So it's a mix of both really there.
Is it still here in this part of the
world? It would be still here, yeah. Some of the cases would be Delta. You know, that one hasn't completely been replaced by Omicron yet, you know.
Mm-hmm. Many people here, of course, have had their booster shots. In Israel, they've decided to go ahead and offer a fourth dose. What do you think should happen?
Yeah, there's not much evidence the fourth dose helps, actually. I mean, it's obviously belt and braces kind of thing. Let's put the fourth dose in. But the EMA aren't recommending that at the moment. So we'll see what happens. We'll see more data on that fourth dose to see if it really does give a further kick. But we know the third dose is tremendous, you see. So there may not be any need for a fourth dose, unless you're vulnerable, of course. Maybe immunocompromised people, they might have it.
And those people, the first three doses may have had very little impact on them.
Yeah, and it's obvious in a way because their immune systems aren't as strong. So maybe you need to give yet another dose to really kick the immune system off. So I would predict that we may see a four-dose regimen for immunocompromised people. Everybody else, by the way, it is a three-dose vaccine now for definite. So the protocol will be three doses into the future, including in kids, by the way. And that's another thing that's going to happen. We'll give children a third shot.
We hear a lot about that on this programme, because obviously people who have had two doses are treated differently when it comes to isolation. rules as opposed to those who have the booster dose. Now, in Germany, they're giving the booster shot to teenagers, but the EMA hasn't recommended it yet or approved it yet. The FDA in the States has. What do you think? Is the jury out on this?
No, I don't think. I think the EMA will approve it, I bet you, because everybody else has. They're examining the data, you see, to make sure it's safe and all that kind of thing. Because the EMA are very cautious, remember. So once they've examined it all, it wouldn't surprise me. They'll say, yes, it's a three-dose schedule. We give 3-4 doses of vaccines to children anyway, you know, and this one joins that list of vaccines where you give multiple doses. So I imagine it'll be globally given to children as a three-dose vaccine.
So it'll be a three-dose mRNA vaccine
For
children.
That's likely to be the case,
Okay. Is science working on a vaccine specifically designed for people who are immunocompromised?
No, not necessarily. It's just extra doses is the idea. Because every time you give an extra dose, you get a kind of a synergistic effect, really, you know. And then I would predict 4 doses in someone who's immunocompromised would be as good as 3 doses in someone who's got a normal immune system, you know, and that's likely to be the scenario then for those people.
And will these, you spoke about the protection given by 3, but will we have to have an annual top-up?
That's likely. Yeah, like the flu. I mean, effectively, this will become like the flu. Every winter, there'll be a vaccination campaign. I predict this winter it'll be Omicron or maybe the pan-coronavirus vaccine will be given.
How far away are we from that pan-coronavirus?
They're close. Yeah. The trials are running now, you know, and it'll probably take another 3 to 6 months before we see some extra data on it. But maybe next September, October time, Omicron at a minimum, but possibly the pan-corona.
What's your read then on what's happening elsewhere in the world? You spoke about Canada. They're obviously, you know, not in as good a place as we are now. And there are other parts of the world that are really in a very difficult phase of this.
That's right. Yeah, the pandemic isn't ending in many places. In Ireland, we're moving towards that end game for definite. And in Europe as a whole, other parts of the world, it's still burning away, you see, especially in developing countries, you know. So again, the mission is to get we said this lots of times, to get the vaccine out to as many countries as possible. And again, the good news there is COVAX have 1 billion doses now available. They're saying they're going to have 20 billion doses available for developing countries this year, you see. So again, that is the key weapon as ever to get rid of this virus, a bit like we did with smallpox. If we globally vaccinate, who knows? You could eliminate the thing, you see, like smallpox. And it's unlikely because it's hard to do, but that's the direction we're headed in.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some of our booster doses just reach their use-by date and they've had to be discarded. And David Nabarro was on the programme here and I was talking to him about that. You know, if you're getting to the point where they're about to be thrown in the bin, is there anything you can do with them? And the system just isn't there to get them out quickly enough to the other countries that need them. Now, that's something for your industry as well in terms of storage and longevity, isn't it, to consider?
It's a shame, isn't it? To see vaccines being thrown out is terrible in many ways. But again, there's a sell-by-date kind of thing on the thing, and the regulatory situation is you can't use them, you know, so it's a bit of a shame. But meanwhile, supply is not a problem, you know. Can you imagine 20 billion doses are being made for developing countries anyway, you know, but still you'd like to be able to use up those vaccines, wouldn't you, instead of throwing them out.
What are your colleagues saying internationally about how Ireland dealt with COVID?
Well, I'm very happy because how did you manage to do that, they're saying to me.
Really?
Yeah. I was on one of the meetings in Canada. 3 of my fellow scientists said, well done, Ireland. You know, so thank you very much.
What do they mean when they say that to you? Is that about vaccination?
Vaccine uptake. Yeah, we managed to vaccinate our country very quickly, you know, compared to other countries. Now, Denmark, there's several countries that are great, but we're up in the top of the class in many ways, you know. And they're all asking me, how did you do it? And I'm going, well, because there was great information, you know, the public bought into it. And the key thing is public buy-in, obviously. Other countries, the public weren't quite so, you know, buying into the whole notion, whereas Ireland did.
And the World Health Organization has said only yesterday we can end COVID-19 as a global health emergency and we can do it this year.
Yeah.
Now, I know you're an optimistic person.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But do you agree with that?
I do. Oh, I do indeed. Now, but remember, if we're adults, we prepare just in case, you know, things might go wrong and a new variant, these various issues that we have are in our minds. But we're supposed to use science to deal with uncertainty, remember. And the science tells us there's a real chance we'll end this year. You know, the emergency phase, as they say, will end this year.
But as you said, you know, there will be people who will get COVID-19. There will be people who will, you know, become unfortunately very sick and potentially die as a result. So do we ever get to a point where we can celebrate the end of COVID-19?
I think we should celebrate it. It's just another infectious disease, you see, in the end there. So if I'm doing medicine in a university in, say, a year's time, and I do infectious diseases, I'll go through each chapter. There will be a chapter called COVID-19. And it will say this is preventable with vaccines and treatable with antivirals, next chapter. You know, but some people still get severe infectious diseases of all kinds, you know, and COVID just becomes another infectious disease that afflicts us. And then we use medicine and vaccines to help us. That's the way I think of it, really.
You'd mentioned St. Patrick's Day as a day of, potentially a day of celebration.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
What do you see on St. Patrick's Day?
I'd love the parades to celebrate, really, our healthcare workers, first and foremost, of course, you know. And then secondly, remember all the people who suffered. I mean, you should never forget the toll was high enough, you know. So let's have a day of remembrance in a way, and also of looking forward and celebration. Wouldn't mm-hmm. it be great? I think the country needs it, yes.
Any predictions as to when the next one's coming?
Well,
pandemic.
That's the next question. Yeah, well, again, there is good news in a sense, because we've learned so much in 2 years about vaccines, viruses, the immune system, brand new discoveries about the immune system. So if another one comes along, we're prepared because of all that knowledge that we've gained through COVID.
Well, Luke, it's been good to talk to you, and we'll talk again soon, no doubt. Luke O'Neill, thank you very much indeed. Coming up next, the Met Police investigating Downing Street.